Good morning. So, yesterday I finished the lecture by explaining to you how one can start to calculate things in the free field theory using path integral or functional integrals. In particular, we derived the propagator, the basic object for the free theory, that is a two-point function. So what we are going to do today is to generalize that and show you how, in principle, at least, after that there are technical difficulties and physical questions to ask, we can generalize that for a fully interacting QFT. So I'm going to present the rules of functional integration quantization for the simplest theory that involves scalar fields, namely massless second quantized particle, which is the 5-4 theory. So I'm going to bring the scalar phi to the 4 theory, which turns out to be deeply related to what you did in statistical mechanics course, namely the study of the thermal fluctuation in the Landau-Ginzburg-Wilson theory. So related to the, this is related to the Landau-Ginzburg-Wilson theory in statistical mechanics. Okay, so we have a theory. Now we have again a scalar field phi, which is a real number. X is a vector, so either it's x0 up to xd minus 1 in Rd. The Euclidean setting, or this is Tx in Minkowski space. And today I will mostly deal with the Euclidean case because I don't have to care about the I factors, but that's okay, and now we are considering a theory with classical Lagrangian, if you want, or classical action. And let me discuss the action in the Euclidean setting. It's the same as the action for the free field, but with an additional 5-4 interaction. And the coefficient in front of this coefficient will be called G. It will be the Kuplik constant. And for conveniency in the calculation, I'm going to normalize this Kuplik constant by a 1 over factorial 4 factor. It's for convenience, but there are some reasons. Okay, so G is positive. Is a coupling constant. Okay. So the free theory describes second quantized free particles of mass m. So free theory. And for the free theory, I will denote the action. For the free theory, we call S naught of phi. The free theory describes massive particles. So what does this term describe? I think that you have seen that in the QFT1 course. This interaction term describes the fact that two particles that propagate in space interacts if they are at the same point in space, at the same, of course, at the same instant in time. So it describes, in fact, local, or if you want, pointwise interaction. And namely, the fact that this is a, if you want, the potential energy for the fields means that if you have two particles at the same point, as we shall see, if G is positive, it means that the energy is higher for the system. So it means that if two particles at the same point, the energy of the system is higher than if they are elsewhere. So it means that there is a repulsive interaction. So that's a local pointwise interaction that is repulsive. So basically, at the level of a classical theory, these are billiard balls. If they touch each other, they repel each other. And we have to study the quantum dynamics of this. Okay. So this is a Euclidean action. And for the real-time action, you apply the usual rule. So in fact, for the time derivative, this doesn't change. And for the special derivative, there is a minus sign, and this will get a minus sign. Okay. So, let me write it exactly if you want, if you prefer. S of phi at real time will be integral dt d minus 1 of x of, there is a factor 1 half d phi over dt squared minus 1 half d phi over dx squared minus m squared over 2 pi squared minus g over factorial 4 pi to the 4. Okay. So why do we have to consider that g is positive or 0? That's because if g was negative, first, for instance, this potential will be unbounded from below. But this reflects also the fact that in that case, the interaction will be attractive. And since the particles are bosons, they will like to be together. And since they will gain energy by being together, and since they are bosons, you can create out of the vacuum as many particles as you want. And they build an infinite density condensate. So the theory, it means that the theory, the vacuum is unstable. The theory has no real ground state. Okay, so we want to quantize this theory, and you have seen already in the QFT1 course how you can try to quantize this theory, considering that G is small, by using the rules of canonical quantization. What I'm going to show you today is how we recover those rules and we can compute things using the functional integration quantization scheme. Okay. So we are going to do perturbation theory. Let me consider an expansion in the coupling constant G, considering that it is small. It's much smaller than one. Okay. So how do we do? Well, we apply our rules of path integral quantization. So simply, we say that, for instance, we have to define a path integral, exponential minus 1 over h bar se of phi. As I told you, I will be mostly considering the Euclidean theory. But as we have seen from the Euclidean theory, we can recover the real-time, so the physical quantum theory, by just making time a real variable instead of an imaginary variable, or Euclidean time become imaginary instead of being real. So, okay. So I will call this the partition function, let us say, this big functional integral. I call this Z. And similarly, I'm interested in computing what's called correlation function. Functions, they are also called Green functions. Which corresponds to corresponding to consider what is the expectation value of products of feed or feed operator in this theory. That consider to compute 1 over z, the functional integral of a phi, exponential of minus 1 over h bar s of phi, and then I had inside my functional integral the value of the field variable I'm integrating over at a different point in space. Okay, and I divide by z in order to normalize, if you want, so that expectation value of the identity operator is always 1 in this theory. Okay? So that's a basic receipt, and we have to see whether this works and gives sensible results, and if possible, better results than the functional integral. So if you are still worried about whether this is well-defined or not well-defined, and in order to make sense of what we are going to compute in the course, I shall assume, although it won't appear in all the rules that I'm going to derive, we shall assume that first, if you want the space-time is regularized into a lattice ZD with a mesh epsilon. So we have done what we done, we introduced an ultraviolet regulator. This will take care of the possible short distance divergence that will appear in the quantity we are manipulating. And we are going to, for instance, we are going to consider that will be proportional to the integral over the whole space-time of something. So we are going to introduce an infrared regulator by making space-time finite, for instance, by a finite torus, d-dimensional torus, of size L. So I'm considering my space-time is a torus with periodic boundary condition and size L. Okay. But what I'm going to do doesn't depend on what I'm going. And at the end, we are going to take the limit L goes to infinity and epsilon goes to zero to recover a continuous space and time quantum theory in infinite space-time. Okay. So let me consider this object. The idea of perturbation theory consists, in fact, of, and remember from what I said, we have to be a bit precise about which measure should we use. Because we know which measure we should use for the free theory, but for the interacting theory, this has to be worked out. So, depending on the measure, this can be different, but the ratio of this with this should, if we normalize things properly, should not depend on the measure provided it's local. So we are not going, in fact, to take as a measure the measure of the free theory. This is the measure for the free theory. Okay? So that's take this as my definition of the path integral, or the functional integral. Okay? So that's, if you want, that's on that. Okay. So Then, what are we going to do? Let me consider again this object. So this partition function. This correlation function of n fields in the interacting theory. Well, I can rewrite this as, let me rewrite the numerator as integral d naught of phi exponential minus 1 over h bar s 0 of phi times exponential minus 1 over h bar g divided by factorial 4 times this interaction term, integral d over s x phi 4 of x, okay, and phi of x1 up to phi of xn. And the same for the denominator. D0 of phi exponential 1 over h bar s for the free theory, the same exponential of the interaction term. But of course, this is not present. And since I have x, I integrate over here and fixed point here, I think in my notes, let's rather denote these points z to be sure that so the ZA points, of course, belongs to our points in space-time, RD. Okay? And now, let us divide in the numerator and in the denominator by z-naught, where z-naught is just a partition function. So the functional integral for the free theory. Okay, and so S0 of phi is just this plus this. Okay. Then this becomes simply, this numerator becomes simply the expectation value in the free theory of this quantity. Let's see. And in the numerator, this becomes 1 over z naught, the integral, functional integral for the free theory of this quantity. That's something quite easy to see. And this corresponds to something that probably you have seen in QFT1, although there are no functional integrals. So basically, what you are going to compute is a ratio of an expectation value of something that is minus g over h bar 1 over factorial 4 integral dd of x phi 4 of x. So this exponential is time phi of x, I'm sorry, z1 phi of zn. So now I denote this as the expectation value of this observable for the free theory. So this is an expectation value or correlation for the free theory. And this is a numerator, and the numerator is the same object. It's the expectation value or the correlation function of this exponential, phi 4 of x, again, computed for the free theory. Okay. And at that stage, we can make So now, perturbation theory at this stage assumes that G is small and that we can expand the exponential. So expand exponential of minus G over factorial 4, 1 over factorial, I'm sorry, h bar, 1 over factorial 4, integral d dx, phi of x, into sum from k equals 0 to infinity of 1 over factorial k times this to the power k, and so there is a factor of minus g over h bar, 1 over factorial 4 to the power k, and then you have a k times this integral, and I can rewrite this as an integral, a multiple integral over k independent variable phi 4 of x1 up to phi 4 of xk. Okay, that's trivial. I realize that I'm already writing the dimension of space with a capital D, which is not very important, but let us be consistent and assume that this is a dimension of space, little d. I think in my notes it was capital D. But so you see. So at this stage, we expand the exponential. That's something that is easy to do. And invert the sum, the calculation of this correlation function in the theory of a sum, and into the sum of the expectation value. So that now we compute, you have to compute expectation value in the free theory of this object and this object. See? Well, this inversion seems innocuous. But in fact, one has to be careful. So I just give you a warning. We are inverting an infinite sum. And an integral, the integral over the fields. So not an integral, but an integral which is big, because it's an integral over field configuration. And mathematically, inverting two sums or inverting two integrals is in general non-trivial. Sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes it's impossible. It gives different results. And in fact, that's the case here. It turns out that even if we were integrating only on one phi variable, so that's the case here. Even in zero-dimensional theory, so assume that we integrate over just exponential of a phi to the of phi 4, phi, 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 where phi is defined only on a single point, and you compute your integral with a free action where there is no derivative, then you already have problems. So even in a zero-dimensional theory where, in fact, you have only a field at the origin, then you can check that while, of course, exponential of G sum something is a convergent series. The sum of the expectation value of this is not a convergent series. So even in the zero-dimensional theory, expectation value of a convergent series with an infinite radius give you a sum over k of something, a sum over k of gk times something, which is not convergent. In fact, it's a series that has a vanishing radius of convergence. It is an asymptotic series, which means that still, when g goes to zero, you get sensible results with arbitrary precision, but there are subtleties. Okay? So keep in mind that this is a non-trivial operation, and it requires a lot of mathematics to really understand what's going on. But it's something that is a feature of the quantum theory. It's a feature of those functional integrals. Okay. So once this is done, once this warning has been done, we forget about the warning and we go on, as usual in real life. Well, at least for French people. Yes?
This is just where we're getting results that the result we get is only going to converge exactly when the g goes to zero.
I'm sorry?
I'm just trying to understand how we deal with the warning you give. It's saying that the results we get won't converge, but they will converge only when the g goes to zero.
No, they will not. Yeah. No, it means that if you, it means basically if you sum the series up to some order, so you get a polynomial and see how this polynomial behaves when g goes to zero. Of course, it's an approximation to the real function. So the point is that if you cut this series up to some order, you get a series that is a good approximation to the real function with some error that goes to zero when g goes to zero. But the point is that the error is not uniform in terms of the index k where you cut the series. So if the series was a convergent series, it was an analytic function with a finite radius of convergence, the difference between the series cut some order and the real function will be uniform and better when you go to a higher order. Here it's not the case. So one must check whether one can get still a control on what's going on and have better approximation scheme. They do exist in this case, at least in 0, 1, 2 dimension, but the math are more subtle. Okay? But I don't want to discuss that. At that stage. Okay. Okay, so let's do that. Let us assume that we are able to do that. So, so that what we get, of course, is that so from this object, for instance, the numerator, our numerator, what does it get? Our numerator becomes sum over k 1 over factorial k, that's what I wrote here already. So I get sum over k, 1 over factorial k, minus the coupling constant divided by h bar, 1 over factorial 4 to the power k, an integral over my position of my phi 4, of x1, phi 4 of xk, then I my external, my phi z of z1, phi of zn, and I have to compute this expectation value or correlator in the free theory. Okay? And the same for the denominator, except that in the denominator, I don't have those five. Okay. And these objects, we know how to compute them in the free theory, because in the free theory, we have Wick theorems that tells us how we can express this object in terms of the two-point correlation function phi at two different points. Okay? And so then we can apply Wick theorem in the same way as you apply Wick theorem in a canonical quantization scheme. So let me just give a few examples. So applying Wick theorem, we obtain a combinatorics that involves the famous Feynman diagrams. That you have already encountered in a slightly different context, but in fact the math are the same in statistical mechanics or in QFT1. So, for instance, you see here that we have to compute an object that where you have k phi 4 term and n phi terms. So I will say that I have k internal mixes and n external these. Okay? And we have to integrate. So let us first concentrate on this object. And of course, as usual, in order to understand what's going on, the best thing is just to start from the lowest order. So let us consider first the case where n equals 0. This is called. Then we are interested into the what's going on in the numerator, in the denominator. And we are going to compute what is the contribution of what's called the vacuum diagram. OK. So first, n equals 0, k equals 1. N equals 0, k equals 1, what we have to compute is integral dd of x1 of phi 4 of x1 in the free theory. Well, we know from this theorem that we have to take all the possible pairings between four points. And there are three of them, you have seen. So we get phi of x1. But phi of x1 is in any case paired with itself. So we get phi squared of x1. This squared. You see? And we have seen that by Feynman integration rules, phi of y1, phi of y2. In the free theory, we represent this by a line joining the two points y1 and y2. So this means simply integral dd of x1 of, we have two lines that joins the same point y. So this is represented by this Feynman diagram. See. Okay. And remember, when I discussed the short distance behavior of the propagator yesterday, we saw that in the continuum theory, this is infinite. We have seen that this phi squared of, let us say, 0.0, given by this Feynman diagram, is infinite if the dimension of space is larger or equal to 2. Okay. In fact, if we are on a lattice, it's finite because we don't have this divergence up to very high momenta. So, in fact, it's diverged like 1 over epsilon to the power d minus 2. So it's finite. Well, it's proportional to on the lattice of mesh epsilon. So, in fact, if we are a bit careful, we can manipulate this object because there are finite numbers. Okay. So now, from now on, and for a moment, we do not really care about the ultraviolet divergences and singularity. Okay, we're going to come back later, but first we are interested into the combinatorics that comes out in this perturbative expansion by applying Wieck's theorem. Okay, so this is the first diagram, and it's called the diagram of the vacuum because, in fact, there are no external legs. In fact, we are interested in probing some properties of the vacuum of the theory, of the ground state. Okay, so now, same things, n equals 0, k equals 2. So now I have to compute same thing. Integral ddx1, ddx2, phi 4 of x1, phi 4 of x2. So now we have to apply V theorem to a product of 8 field. So there are many, many more terms. But in fact, many of those are the same. Because, for instance, if you make a pair out of 2 phi here, 2 phi here, 2 phi here, and 2 phi here, what you will get is a product of those two quantities. So you are going to get something like integral ddx1, ddx2. So then what you can get is basically you can get pairings of the phi at x1 and x2 independently. So this is point 1, this is point 2. That's what you can get. Then you can get pairings where you have one pairing here, one pairing here, and two pairings between the remaining phi. So you get a contribution that is like that, 1 and 2. And finally, you can pair each of the phi here with one of the phi here. So you get so you are going to get something that's represented by this diagram. Okay. And again, such a line represents phi of x1, phi of x1, but such a line will represent the propagator between phi of x1 and phi of x2. So this depends on the distance. Okay? So basically, remember, we call this the propagator g of y1 minus y2, the propagator for the free theory. Okay, let me put a zero to remember that it's propagator of the free theory. So this is g0 of 0 squared. This is g0 of 0, I'm sorry, to the power of 4, because there are 4 of them. Here there are 2 of them, and then there is g0 of x1 minus x2 squared. And this is g0 of x1 minus x2 to the power of 4, because there are 4 propagators. Okay. Now one has to be also a bit careful because there are many different ways to obtain this diagram. For instance, here I told you there are three different ways, which means that here there is a factor of three, and this was a big mistake for me not to write this factor of three. You should have raised your hand and said, where is the factor of three? Here, that's the same thing. Here, there is a factor of 3 coming from there. And the factor of 3 coming from this one. Here, one needs to be a bit more careful, because there is here, you have to choose a pair of 2 points between 4 points. And if I'm not mistaken, there are 6 ways to do that. So here we have a 6. I should have taken a bit more careful. So here we have a 6 way. We have 6 ways to do that here. And then we have remaining with 2 phi here, 2 phi here. And you have 2 ways to pair 2 to this one. So you have factor 2. And finally here, how many ways do you have to pair 1 point here with 1 point here? Well, you have factorial 4 terms. So you have 24 terms, because you take one of the 5, you choose one of the 4 here. The second one of the 3 remaining. The third one of the 2 remaining, and then that's OK. So you have here 9, 128. And 24 different ways. Okay. Yes?
What's the 128 from?
Pardon? This is, oh, no, no, I'm sorry. This is 64. I don't know. This is 64.
72, I think.
What? No, no, this is, I'm sorry. No, no, this is 72. Sorry. Yes, this is 9, this is 74, and this is factorial 4. Which is 24. Okay, sorry. Okay. And finally, well, remember that, for instance, there was one of a factorial 4 and a factorial 4 here. So in fact, we were interested, for instance, here into one of a factorial 4 of this, which means 3 divided by factorial 4. This is 3 divided by factorial 4. So the final coefficient is 1 over 8 here. Here we had, in fact, 1 over 2 times factorial 4 squared. So we had 1 over 2 times factorial 4 squared. So at the end, we get for this diagram a factor 1/8. Here we get a factor 1 over 128. That's where it was. Here we get a factor 1 over 16. And here we get a factor 1 over 48. If we take into account both the combinatorial factors that come from the expansion of the exponential and the combinatorial factors that come from how many Vic contraction leads to the same diagram. Okay. So this is a rule. Okay. So now, let me see. How does it work for the n equal 2, the 2-point diagrams, what we call the 2-point diagram. Okay, so same exercise. First, n equals 0, well, n equals 2, k equals 0. This is just the free theory where we had to compute phi of z1, phi of z2 in the free theory. So we have seen that this is just this Feynman diagram, which is between 1 and 2. Okay? Now, n equal 2, k equals 0, 1. Now we have to compute phi of z1, phi of z2, phi 4 of x1. Okay. And we have to integrate over x1. So again, we apply Wieck's theorem in the free, and that's of course computed in the free theory. So we can make a Wieck's theorem where applying this to this and this to this, so we get basically this times this contribution. So we are going to get this diagram. Well, let me drive it like that. These diagrams, 1, 2 times these diagrams. And I'm integrating over x1. So this is z1, this is z2, and this is x1. Okay. And then we can apply Wieck's theorem by making contraction between this one and this one. And again, we have 4 times 3 different ways. So we get a factor 12 times this. So this is 1. This is 2, and this is the diagram, the internal vertex 1. So I'm careful to write the internal diagrams as full points and the external points as empty circle. Pardon?
The first diagram has a symmetry factor as well.
Pardon?
On the first diagram, then?
Yes.
There's no symmetry factor right now?
No, because I'm just, this is phi of z1, phi of z2 expectation. So this is just here. Oh, yes. So then, of course, you get the factor 3 here. And if you compute this divided by 1 over factorial 4, again, then you get the factor, let me write the final factor here. Which color did I get? I use the color, the white color, so I get a 1 over 8. And here I have get a 12 divided by factorial 4, so which is a factor 1 over half, 1 half. Okay. So these are called the symmetry factor. The diagrams. Okay? And for instance, of course, you have to integrate this. So what is the, this diagram represent a number. It represent, what is the amplitudes, what's called it's an amplitude, a Feynman amplitudes, or a Feynman integral associated to this diagram. And in this case, this is this, for this diagram is g naught of z1 minus z2 times g naught of 0 squared times an integral over dx1. So the volume of space, hence better to have a finite lattice, to have something finite. While this is g naught of z1 minus x1, g naught of z2 minus x1, g naught of 0, there is only one g naught of 0 and not squared, and integrated over dx1. OK. And you see that this is an integral that is a number times the volume of space time, while this is an integral which is, well, if it's converged, which is a number over the one, because here it's not independent, it's not independent of the position of the point x1. So this diagram and these diagrams behave in a very different way in the limit when L goes to infinity. Okay. Good. Then, well, before going to the general structure of the theory, let me just compute the n equal 4 diagram So 4 point. There. Okay. So n equal 4, k equal 0 means simply that I have to compute phi of z1 up to phi of z4 in the free theory. We have seen that using the free theorem, that this is given by the sum of this three Feynman diagrams that are the three pairings, possible pairings between the four phi. So this is one, this is point two, this is point three, this is point four, one, two, three, four, this is one, two, three, four. Okay, so now n equal 4, k equal 1. Again, what we have to compute is there is a factor 1 over factorial 4, phi of z1 up to phi of z4, phi 4 of x1, and we compute the expectation value of this in the free theory, and we integrate over x1. Position of x1. So again, when we apply the Vick theorem, we can get this diagram here times these diagrams with x1. But there is, so these are the same diagram here. Okay, and with a factor 1. But now we can also pair each of these phi with one of these one. Well, we can also do something else. We can get, we can pair one of these phi with one of these phi and one of these phi with one of these phi. So we can get things like that. We can get this diagram. Plus this diagram. Plus corresponding diagrams. You see? And again, with, well, this one will have a symmetry factor 1 over 8. Because basically, that's the one we get. This one will have a symmetry factor 1 half. Because that's what comes out from this. And then there is a new term, which is an interesting one, which is what's happening when you contract each of the phi here with one of the phi here. Then we get diagrams where you have this, this, this. So this is point 1, 2, 3, 4, the external point. And this is the internal point x1. And how many ways do you have to do that? You can, you take the first one, you choose to pair it to one of the four. Second one of the three remaining. Third one of the two remaining. So you get factorial four terms. So what you get as a symmetry factor here is one, because one is factorial four divided by factorial four. So these diagrams are diagrams that you could have guessed from what we did before. This diagram is new. And it indeed represents the interaction, if you want, between two particles entering, two particles going on with the interaction. So this is a term that really describes the interaction. Okay. Okay, and again, the amplitude of this diagram, this is the symmetry factor. Symmetry or combinatorial factor. And the amplitude associated to this diagram is integral dd of x1 of g of 0 of z1 minus x1, g0 of z2 minus x1, g0 of z3 minus x1, g0 of z4 minus x1. Okay? Good. Okay. So, well, this is the example of Feynman rules. Well, these are examples of Feynman diagrammatics rules. And this generalizes to this kind of calculation. Okay. And well, before going to the general procedure, give you some more diagrams. One last quite important remark. Oops. Remember, well, for instance, let's go to the two-point function. Well, the two-point function is here. So this diagram is this diagram, a diagram that occurs in the numerator for the two-point function. And this diagram is a diagram that occurs in the denominator. And of course, well, for the vacuum diagram, n equal, yeah. So, in fact, when we are interested into the two-point function, for instance, if we are interested into the two-point function, phi of z1, phi of z2 in the interacting two-point function. So in the numerator, this is given by this diagram. Minus g, well, let me set h bar equal 1. Moment, just to not to take care of the h bar, because in fact there is an h bar in the propagator and there is a h bar coming from the vertices. So I get a minus g times this diagram times this diagram. Okay, with a factor 1/8 plus this diagram. Is a factor 1/2 plus higher order terms. So this was the numerator, and the denominator was given by the exponential expansion of the, just the exponential of the interaction term. So for k equals 0, I get just the expectation value of 1, so I get a 1. So I get a 1 minus g times this diagram times 1/8 plus higher order terms. Okay? And now we are interested into the expansion as a power of g. So we invert this, and you see that inversion of this cancels this one. So these terms cancels. These two terms cancels. Well, this one cancels. And you end up with the free propagator minus g times these diagrams is a factor 1/2 plus. So you see that there is a cancellation of the what we call the vacuum diagrams. The diagrams with no external point attached between the numerator and the denominator. So this is the expression for the two-point function. OK. Yes?
I have a question concerning the cancellations.
Yes.
When we do the cancellation, we basically cancel the whole diagram in the numerator, not only the base, vacuum bubble, right?
Well, it turns out that when you go to the systematic expansion, all the diagrams that contain vacuum bubbles here will be cancelled by this one. Yes.
But in the numerator, there's not only the diagram contains, apart from the vacuum bubble, it also contains a connected piece.
They may contain disconnected piece because, for instance, you see that these diagrams contain vacuum diagrams. It contains disconnected pieces that do not contain vacuum diagram, and it contains a connected piece. So we can repeat. Well, let me, to reply your question, let me just do the same calculation for this. For the connected four-point function, Z1 up to 4Z4. This will be given by, these diagrams plus these diagrams plus these diagrams plus these diagrams divided by these diagrams plus these diagrams. So this contribution will contain this one, but only this one. So this will be given by this plus this. This is free theory, minus g times these two last contributions. So this one plus all the other you can get by just adding, if you want, a bubble to one of the line here. So there are six of them. Plus this new diagram. And that's it. So the connected pieces are there. This diagram is what's called the connected diagram. This diagram is disconnected. Okay? And if you want to keep only the connected diagram, let me go a bit ahead of what I wanted to do. If you want to keep only this diagram and remove these diagrams from this quantity, there is a solution. Very simple. Here, I didn't draw the symmetry factor, but remember, here there is a symmetry factor that is 1/2, and here there is a symmetry factor that is 1. What you have to compute is the connect, what we are going to call the connected correlation function or connected Green function. It corresponds to the cumulant. So this is given, this is by definition, this is equal to the 4 phi, this one, minus all the possible cumulant, and there are three of them, involving the two-point function of the interacting theory. Take this quantity given by these diagrams and remove the three terms corresponding to these diagrams for 1, 2, or this diagram times this diagram for 3, 4, plus this diagram for 1, 3 times 2, 4, plus this for 1, 4 times 2, 3. Well, you can check very easily that these terms is equal to the contribution of these diagrams plus these diagrams, but of course not these diagrams. So this is then simply equal to this diagram. Okay? Good. Oops. So now, have time, so let me just. Can you please activate the video? Excuse me. Can you activate the video?
Perhaps I should. I think I'll put your hands together and pray.
What? You? What should I do?
You have to put your hands together.
Ah, okay. Do I have to knee? Please. No, the guy is sleeping or having coffee. It worked last year. So what did I say last year? Yesterday, I said something, it worked. So I must have used the right spell. Huh. Yeah, I just wanted to show you some more. And rather than drawing them. Yes. Thank you, Dan. Perhaps you could switch off the light. Ah, yes. Do you see something? No. Okay, I will switch off now. It seems that I'm seeing the... Let me check if I am seeing the video. But I think so. Where is monitors? Yes, it should work. I don't see anything where it hurts. Ah, no, it's.
Counting down.
This doesn't starting. Suspense. Yes, thank you. Okay, so this is basically, this represents the diagram for the what's called the vacuum diagram, namely the diagram where are no external points attached. So that's what we did. And in red, here are the connected diagrams. These are disconnected, these are connected. Okay, so this is what we did. Here is, well, there is a way, in fact, to compute why it's a 1 over 8 here by some, a bit of group theory. Attach labeling to the vertices, labeling to the legs attached to each vertex, that means a phi, and counting and using a simple theorem of group theory, finite group theory, but which explains, for instance, why this is 1 over an integer number. We basically see order of some symmetry group attached to the graph, but I'm not going to discuss that at that point. So here are the two-point diagrams. So we have seen this is the two-point diagram for the free theory, the two-point diagrams for the at first order for the interacting theory. Among these diagrams and this diagram are connected. This one is not. And if you go to the next order, I've not done that. There are 7 different kinds of diagrams. Among them, only 3 are connected. So those one contains vacuum diagrams. So basically, they will disappear when you compute the expected two-point function at second order in the coupling constant. And 4-point diagram, again, here are 3 theory. These are all the diagrams that I discussed on the blackboard. Here they are all listed explicitly. Among those diagrams, only one is connected. And if we are interested into what's called the connected vacuum, the connected diagrams. So the connected vacuum diagrams, forget about this one. I won't explain what it is. This is the first order connected diagrams. These are the, yes, no, these are the one connected that I will discuss. These are the connected diagrams for the two-point function. If you go to the, okay. And one, here I'm going to, so among those connected diagrams, you can notice already something going on. For the two-point function, these connected diagrams are made out of chains, can be made out of chains of diagrams that I've put in a blue box that have a peculiar property. They are called irreducible diagram. It means that take these diagrams. If I cut any of its internal line, it stays connected. Namely, there is at least one line or a series of lines connecting two vertices. Okay? While this diagram, for instance, is not irreducible because if I cut this line or this line, some of the vertices get disconnected. So they will play an important role later on. Okay, so now here is a 4-point function. So again, this is a 4-point function at first order in coupling constant. That's what we discussed. There is only one connected diagram. Now, here are the connected 2-point function at order 2. So if you go to order 2 in the coupling constant and keep only the connected diagram because the general diagrams, there are too many of them, you see that you have, again, diagrams where you can add just one bubble onto the line. So this is this diagram with the line dressed. And you have new diagrams where you have an internal, you know, bubble joining the two internal vertices. You have 3 different ways to connect this bubble to the external points, and they have a symmetry factor. You compute, apply Vick theorem, you find it's 1/2. Okay? And again, this connected 4-point function, you can view them as a tree made out of vertices that are irreducible diagrams. Because these diagrams, if you cut a line, it's still connected. This diagram of this diagram, if you cut a line, it's still connected. Okay, and if I add something else, oh, okay, so here to see how it works. Now, these are the connected diagrams that comes out in the six-point function. And in fact, if you consider the six-point function, you have to go to order three in the coupling constant to see connected diagrams. No, I'm sorry. You have to go to second order in the coupling constant to see one connected diagram, which is a tree like that. It's a tree because it's you have just pointed branches. So you have these diagrams and all the possible ways to connect two diagrams to those ones. So there are about 15 of them, I think. And again, at order G3, you have diagrams that are obtained from this one by just dressing one of the propagator. You have a diagram that is obtained here by expanding, for instance, this into a bubble. And you have a new diagram that is a triangle diagram. And again, I wrote the symmetry factor. And again, these diagrams are made out of trees whose vertices are replaced by irreducible diagrams. So these are irreducible diagrams we have met already. And this is a new irreducible diagram that appears for the three-point function, this triangle. Okay, so there is an important concept, which is the concept of irreducible diagram. And you can also check that, well, if you forget about that, all the connected vacuum diagrams for the 5-4 theory are irreducible. But that's not true in general, for a general quantum field theory. But for the 5-4 theory, this is true. Okay, I think I should stop there for the diagrammatic, because well, this I think I will explain a bit tomorrow. Okay, so can you switch off now? And now, a few words about the amplitudes. That's things that you have already seen, I think. So now, of course, so we have diagrammatic rules that tells you that you can expand the perturbative expansion of, for the correlation function in terms of quantities that are attached to Feynman diagrams. So you have to do some combinatorics, draw all the possible diagrams, count the combinatoric factor that comes out from the Wick theorem, which in this case is quite simple. And then, of course, you have an amplitude. So you have so you have some combinatorics that we have seen, plus some rules to compute the amplitudes or integrals, these famous Feynman integrals. Okay. So what are the rules? The rules is that you have external vertices. See, you have external vertices like that. You have internal vertices that I represent by a line like that. So internal vertices are associated with some z's. So the internal vertices are associated with some xa with my notation, well, za and xi. You have a propagator. You have to associate propagators joining any vertices. Okay, and you have to, the rule is to integrate over the position of the vertices, of the internal vertices. Okay. So we integrate dxi for the internal vertices. Okay. Now, to each internal vertices, you attach the factor minus g. And if you have to be careful, you have a minus g 1 over h bar. It's an internal calculation. The external vertices is associated to the such a vertex is associated to the propagator for the free field g y1 minus y2. So y can be either an external position or internal position. So this is y1. And this is y2. And in fact, you have to add an h bar if you have there. Okay, and that's the rule. So the internal vertices are fixed. Okay. And these are the rules for the Feynman rules for Euclidean space. Space and position representation. Okay. Now, instead of computing things in the position representation, you'd be interested in the Fourier transform of the correlation function that you're interested in. Just take the Fourier transform. So you may be interested in what's going in Euclidean space and in the momentum representation. Momentum representation means that what we are interested in computing is the correlation function or the of the Fourier transform of the fields. Okay. So the rules are exactly the same, but simply now, in fact, to an external vertex like that, A is associated momentum PA. PA. So a D momentum. To a propagator. To the propagator. Like this. Are associated two momenta. Let us call Q1 and Q2 with the rule that since it is a function of y1 minus y2, there is a conservation of the momenta, so there is a delta of Q1 minus Q2. So in some sense, the in momentum here is equal to the out momentum here. Namely, minus the in momentum here. And of course, it's the Fourier transform of G naught we have seen is just Q1 squared plus M squared. So this is a Lorentzian function. And again, there is a factor H bar. Yes?
The way you've got, maybe I'm wrong, the way you've got Q1 and Q2, it looks to me like Q1 plus Q2.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Q1 plus Q2. Yeah, you are right. Sorry, this was a typo or an error. Okay. To the vertex. Now, vertex like that, internal vertex or any vertex. In fact, it will be a function of the all the momenta Q that enters. So if I have a vertex with have a Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4 that are attached to the propagator that goes there. So we have a momentum here, Q, that flows to the momentum. And Well, here all the phi are at the same points, which means that in fact there is a factor minus g and a delta function of q1 plus q2 plus q3 plus q to the 4. There is a factor h bar, of course. And in addition, in fact, if you want to normalize the delta function properly, there is a 2 pi to the power d here and a 2 pi to the power d here. It's normalization of the Fourier transform. And this is a delta function in d-dimensional space. So the momentum, the momenta in RD. Okay. So that, for instance, these diagrams, as we have seen, well, for instance, these diagrams, we have seen that it is, so I have Z1, Z2, Z, well, X1 is, we have seen what it is in position space, and in momentum space, there is an incoming momentum here, which is transferred up to there. So there is in momentum P, out momentum P here. There is a momentum K that is carried by this propagator in this Fourier transform representation. So here again, there is a plus K out and a minus K here. So the momentum are conserved. So the Feynman amplitude associated to, to this diagram is just 1 over p squared plus m squared squared, this propagator times this propagator, times the contribution of this propagator. But then it has to be integrated, of course. Ah, of course, because we have to integrate. What I forgot is that since we are doing a Fourier transform, we have integrate over the k's associated to the internal line of the momentum. So we have an integral d dk over 2 pi squared 1 over k squared plus m squared. Okay? And the same things for instance, well, these diagrams, its contribution will be just one, the propagator for this momentum, this momentum, this momentum, this momentum, and the conservation of the momenta. And to end up with this diagram, for instance, these diagrams that appears in the four-point function. If I have here a P1 entering a P2, a P3, and a P4, I have a momentum K flowing here. By conservation of momentum here, I have a momentum flowing here, which is P1 plus P4 plus K. And I have the constraint, of course, that P1 plus P2 plus P3 plus P4 has to be equal to 0, because the sum of the momenta here has to be equal to 0. But the sum of the momenta here has also to be equal to 0, which implies that the sum of this momenta plus this momenta has to be equal to 0. So there is conservation of the momenta. And the amplitude associated to this diagram, it will be the first 1 over p1 squared plus m squared up to 1 over p4 squared plus m squared. Well, this is the trivial part, times an integral over this momenta, ddk over 2 pi to the power d. That's the normalization of the Fourier transform. And here you have a 1 over k squared plus m squared times a 1 over what I'm going to call p squared plus m plus, I'm sorry, p plus k squared plus m squared with p equal p1 plus p2 equal minus p3 plus p4. P1 plus p4 equal minus p3 plus p2. Okay. So that's the total momentum that enters in this channel. And finally, we did all those calculations by just not taking care of whether the object exists. For the combinatorics, that's fine. For the fine moon, that's fine. Where are the ultraviolet divergence? They are contained in the fact that these integrals diverge. This is divergent if d is larger or equal to 2, because we have d dk over k squared, so it's divergent at infinity. And this integral is divergent at infinity for large k, d dk over k squared times p plus k squared. So this is divergent if if d is larger or equal to 4. That's for the ultraviolet divergent. Okay. Okay, so I think we are in a good shape to start to discuss tomorrow a little bit more of the combinatorics of the perturbative expansion and to start to discuss how to deal with this seemingly divergent of the theory and how to build a consistent path integral formulation that controls this problem, namely start to discuss renormalization in the phi-4 theory. Okay.